I'm hiding you. Beware of Bob. He is sometimes tardy. Laura. P.S. It just struck me that Bob's name is a warning in itself. B. Beware. O. Of. B. Bob. October 3rd, 1986. Dear Diary, I don't know where to begin. I returned home the following afternoon without a single gripe from the watchdogs, Mom and Dad. I was halfway down the side of the house when I realized I was heading way out of Uppertown to a party filled with people at least 6 to 10 years my senior. And I was thinking I'd be back by sunrise? Never. Not to mention that Bobby had some go fast for me somewhere. At least I thought that to be the situation before we arrived at Leo's. I'm guilty of the understatement of the year with that one. But anyway, I must first brag about the tangled web I did weave and how not a stitch was out of place or questioned when I arrived back home at nearly 6 p.m. the following day. Need I say, I have now crossed over into a dimension of intense sleep deprivation, 3 days and 4 nights, and taking into consideration the treat I was given as a door prize before leaving, I could be up until next month, painlessly dropping pound after pound, 6.5 since the last day I slept. I find that no matter what drug, if any, I have inside me, the less I sleep, the less I eat. The note said something simple and to the point. Skip it if it bores you, but I guess I gained a sense of satisfaction and joy out of pulling the wool over the folks's, as Bobby says, eyes. Mom, it is just about 5 a.m., and I have tried again and again to get back to sleep. After almost 2 solid hours of fair tries, I was suddenly reminded of the clearing I spent the other afternoon in. Troy so enjoyed grazing there, and I think a blanket and a book will set the stage for the distance I guess I need to feel. Not from you, Mom. I could hear you taking that personally, but don't. I just mean away from the people. Just a few hours with my pony, Troy. And maybe a nap over Nancy Drew or something? Please don't worry. I'll call before 6 if I'm not already home by then. Love, Laura. I spent the night at the most outrageous party ever, and Mom sat quietly at home, imagining me wrapped in the words of a good book, sinking softly into a blanket on the grass. I'll need to make sure Troy gets a ride tonight. Somehow. Shit. I hadn't thought of him until now. I hope Zippy doesn't phone to suggest he take Troy out. Damn. I'll be right back. I'm going to ring the stables right away. So, Bobby had borrowed his uncle's truck for the night, and as long as we stayed off the 21, we weren't running the risk of getting pulled over. Bobby without a license. Me, no sleep. In an enormous lie, in my book, to my parents? Can you imagine? Off we went. Music playing surprisingly loud and clear for the age of the truck. It made me feel like it all worked. The way the trees were blowing, the speed of the truck, the music. My nerves as I began to undress into my birthday gift. Sent via airmail from Cousin Maddie. Did I even tell you I talked to her for almost an hour last week? Well, this dress is to die for, skin tight, and it came with an insert in the breast area that allowed you, if you so desired, to lift your breasts upwards instead of leaving them flat the way some dresses do. Bobby nearly killed us when he missed a tree by a quarter inch. He said it would have been worth it to die with my eyes transfixed on a bosom as sweet as yours. Doesn't that sound like a country song or something? Transfixed on a bosom as sweet as yours. Bobby took me off to the side of the truck before we went into the house. He kissed me and then said it was important that I knew that Leo, from a straw's distance, is a great guy, funny, and can hold his own in a chat. Then he shook his head in a drastic N-O. I wanted to know what the hell that meant. I mean, what if I did what he said N-O to? Bobby turned around just when we got in the doorway, and he said, "Tonight it's not important. I'm pretty sure you'll hang with me. Just don't ever fuck the guy. He's into some weird shit, that Leo man." I nodded and was suddenly, unmistakably intrigued by the phrase, weird shit, and its sexual context. Bobby went to grab me a beer, I guess, and Leo came up to me. Shit. It was there. Right away. Both of us knew it. And he said, "Laura Palmer, how about that? Last time I saw you, old Dwayne Milford was giving you a plaque or something. Some prize you won?" I had to interrupt him. "Finest performance. 5 consecutive years. He asked if I had proof of performance quality, and I assured him proof was in abundance, but I was about to fall asleep and die of thirst at the same time. He called to Bobby, which I was grateful for, seeing as how I was entering a bedroom, post-warning and all. "Hang on, I gotta do a couple lines. I'm coming down, and I'm about to tell you some incredible stuff. Hang on." So I'm in this room with Leo and Bobby, and just as we're about to pass the straw, the door to the bathroom opens. A bathroom off the bedroom. And Ronette Pulaski walked out of it, looking like she had given up junk food and had started taking pretty good care of everything on her body except her nose. She was pretty high, and just by the way Leo nodded his head toward her and said a quick hey led me to believe this was a regular kind of thing. "You want to hear something freaky?" It didn't become completely clear to me until now. But when I went down to the spot Bob takes me, and I was saying that sometimes I smelled my panties and wanted to put my face between the legs of a girl and taste her. God, sometimes it feels right to say, other times I can't. Well, I had actually just for that moment thought of Ronette. Just because she was the only girl aside from Donna that I had seen naked. We were in assembly together about 2 years ago, maybe more, and we were the only two costume changes in the middle of the program. We changed clothes and kind of smiled at one another. I guess I was attracted to her somehow, by the way her eyes appeared sad, but cold. I liked her body. Anyway, it was strange to see her there. I have no idea what she thinks of me. I doubt it's wise to ask. All I need are rumors buzzing around that Ronette and I are seeing each other every chance we get. Mom would have to be sent to the Haywards, if not the hospital itself, and Dad, he'd most likely think we were talking about a new game. An extension of Kick the Can, maybe. Who cares? God, I am so high. I can't stop writing like 1,000 words a minute. I hope for your sake that this is legible, because Lord knows I am in no space to slow down. This is the drug I have been waiting for all of my life. I feel strong, confident, sexy, intelligent. Pretty fucking cool, I have to say. And not one person last night made mention of my age. I can hold my fucking own. I could feel the vibes when we walked in. I knew it was going to be one of those, Bobby was right, parties. Fucking crazy stuff going on in the corner or something. Leah was watching with basically 100% concentration, so Bobby and I had to go see. Man, there was this chick lying with her skirt pulled up, and she was betting that no one could get her off, and if they did, it was 100 big ones. She was asking 5 to give it a shot. Now remember, I had been at the party for a fair amount of time, and I was pretty fixed up as far as being sedated and wired simultaneously. I looked around at everyone, and I must have been showing it all across my face because Bobby pulled me back a bit by the arm, and I said I wanted to try it if it didn't make him too uncomfortable, and he just looked at me like there was no changing my mind now anyway, so I don't think he thought I would ever even consider such things. I asked if I could speak privately in her ear before making a decision, and she said she'd love to hear my voice up close. So I leaned in, and I said, I'm going to make you feel real good. That $100 is already spent. I looked up for a moment, and I asked if she was relaxed. She said she was already getting a strange feeling that I knew what I was doing. I made her move a little on the couch, and I kissed her, just a soft kiss on her lips. Before I'd even touched her, she wanted me to know her name. I told her I'd call her what she needed to hear. She was beginning to get me pretty hot, which I didn't think would happen, but it helped because the feelings just worked together, just clicked. I opened her and I told her she was pretty. Did she know that? She nodded. I told her I couldn't hear what she had said. She said, yes. I smiled. Yes, what? I said. I didn't hear you. She took a long breath and she brought her fingers to her mouth, and the guys behind her started going, yeah. I heard someone in the back drop his glass and he said, shit, man, this girl is getting her to do it. She's even asking for it, man. I knew she wanted to say things she wasn't. I made sure she had to ask, yell something. I knew she wanted to hear that, for the men in the room to hear it. I told her everyone was looking at her. I told her they all could feel and taste it with their eyes. Some men moved their fingers to let out the heat in their hands. I knew it was happening for her. I just had to keep her safe. She wanted it bad, and I told her that she was beautiful. Boom! She was grabbing at me, pulling my hair, calling, Laura, Laura, God, the way you make me feel. This big guy was trying to squeeze his way in, and I told him to back off a minute. He was bent out of shape, but then watched how desperately the girl needed just a moment to herself. She took me by the hair and she said, I haven't been able to do that for almost 2 years. I'd like to see you back here, if I haven't scared you off already. It dawned on me that it was an appropriate time to mention that I felt like I was coming down a little, maybe from the sugar kisses. This guy came up to me, and he looked at me, straight in the eye. Little one, he waited. I just had to come look at you, see your skin and all. He smiled. I never saw so many guys go from looking at her like she was nothing to wishing they were you. I told him I was glad he liked it. I didn't mean to break up the party the way I did. I have a hard time believing I did it. I guess I'm sort of out of my mind. I guess they left because I went a little. He laughed and said, no one's going anywhere except outside on the lawn with a picture of you floating through their heads. They'll be back soon as they all empty out. The woman finally made it up off the couch and came and kissed my chest, where the dress cut low at the neck. She wanted me to know she felt she owed me one if we ever crossed paths again. Leo let me know that I made his party. Guys will be talking for a while about this. Talk about a weird way to meet people. I'm going to have to visit Leo soon and see how many of my thoughts strike him. Maybe he'll do some of those weird things that Bobby warned me about. I'll bet I freaked Bobby out tonight anyway. I can't understand what got into me. But I wanted it. I wanted to try. And there it was. I don't care how high I am, or how high I was. It felt good doing all of it. You can bet I'll do it again. Laura. December 14th, 1986. Diary. I dreamed about Bob last night. Not a real nice dream at all. A little sick in my opinion because I have so much hatred for the way he spoiled me. Made me feel ugly and bad for wanting love or affection. He ruined all of my pride and self-esteem for the longest time. I could only be pretty and sweet because pretty and sweet was easy. Good grades, even better. No one wanted me. I wouldn't even let on that I knew what sex was. He did ruin me, didn't he? I mean, in the dream, he came to the window at Leo's and saw me. It was a nastier scene in the dream than it was last night in reality. He kept showing this image of me again and again. And then he was standing by the tree and he said, "You wouldn't have been able to do any of that if it weren't for me." I told him he was wrong. I told him I learned all that he saw when I was alone so that I could do something to make myself feel good and be able to heal the wounds that he made. He said, "Oh, yeah. Then why do you want Leo to tie you up? Maybe eat you that way. Make you a slave. I know you want it, just the way I taught you, little bitch. I saw you with the wand, playing with yourself. You were thinking of bad boy Leo, not Bobby, little boy who weeps after he gets fucked by a little slut like you." And I woke up, ashamed. Horrified. Guilty. And I imagined him suddenly, right before me, at the edge of my bed. "You forgot, Laura. I know everything. See everything. Go anywhere I want. I could tell you more about what you think are secrets than you could ever tell yourself. You let your guard down, didn't you? Let me have a nice vacation from that stench of yours. Then you had to call me back. Rancid little bitch. You're pretty mean to me sometimes when you write, aren't you? We'll have to fix that. Make you love me like you used to. I remember that. Soon you will too." And then he disappeared. I need to do something that is right and good today. Who in the fuck is he? And why does he hate me so much? I want to die and to forget everything else. I can't take it anymore. I begin to feel good. And then someone makes me feel that I'm dirty. Then someone kisses me just right, and I feel wanted and excited all over again. I need to know if what I'm doing is right. I can't let Bob be the one who taught me to wish to be tied up sometimes. I don't ever want to be hurt. I never have. I only want to play the games where I have to say dirty things sometimes, not mean things like Bob thinks. And if I am punished, I am punished with sex, Not pain. Bob is not who puts these ideas in my head. I won't let him be the one. These are my private thoughts. I'm afraid I'll never make it in and out of another sexual experience ever without being afraid he will come and tell everyone lies about me. If someone who loves me reads this years from now, please try not to hate me. I only feel the way I feel. I don't hurt anyone else, and I don't want to. I try every day to be better and more the way I think the world wants to see a girl like me. But I am Laura. I am sad. God, I'm sad again. Why? I miss laughter and a day where time is spent with my friends who don't care what I think of late at night. They don't hate me for sometimes dreaming late at night with my hand buried between my legs, ashamed and of how I wish that my other hand would simply pull the trigger. Bob, I forbid you to come to me ever again, in dreams or in reality. You are not welcome. I hate you. I feel so alone. Laura.
January 10th, 1987. Dear Diary, I tried to talk to Dad at breakfast and he just sat there twitching like he doesn't have time for any extra thoughts. Doesn't have time for the fucking suicide dreams his own daughter is having. Neither one of my parents will talk to me. What is this? Some kind of dream? Dad took off all of his clothes and shouted, "It's a dream! Fucking relax, would you? So your mother saw photos of you licking the little privates of other women. It appeared in these photos that you were enjoying yourself. Is this true?"
I've never been more afraid than I am at this minute. I didn't even realize I was sleeping when this was written. Was I? Oh, shit. This is too weird. Just a little too weird.
Was Bob here? Was Bob inside? I won't even think it.
L.
February 3rd, 1987.
Dear Diary, there is no cocaine. It's gone. I hate the way I feel. So much like I've been in a vacuum. My body has been violated. My thoughts, my dreams, the images I have of Mom and Dad are now awful and depressing pictures I can't stop seeing. If she ever knew the things that have happened. I wonder if anyone would believe me if I told them all I know about him. I could have the police wait for him until he showed up, but he would know just like he knows everything in my mind. My mind. Is it his toy? Something he bats around with his paws? I'm just going to have to tell everyone and make them believe and just tell.
Tell them what, Laura Palmer? Tell them that I take you away and you never argue. You never scream for help. Tell them you see me, but no one else does. No one will believe you, Laura Palmer. I'm too careful.
Dear God, it's happened again. He stepped onto this page. This is not at all what I was trying to write. It frightens me terribly to know that Bob found his way into the pages of my diary as if he were feeding these words to my mind. Just seconds in time for me to think that they are my own. Is there something I can get for you, Bob? Anything the family might own that you would take in trade for your permanent absence?
Talk to me, Bob.
About a trade? Trade me for something else?
I agree. I'll trade.
Who will it be?
Can't tell with these things. I may change my mind.
I thought so. Hell. April 2nd, 1987. Diary. I need coke. Bad. Or I'll never make it. I gotta reach Bobby. Where the fuck is he when I need him? This is just great. I'm here. Laura Palmer, honor student, model citizen of Twin Peaks. And I've got a habit. I've only just begun. I'm not ready for this job. I'm still afraid Bob's waiting. If he's in the woods, he'll get me now. 'Cause fuck if I don't plan on having a big fat line of confidence up my nose in about half an hour. A big white line that calls my name the way a lover should. I wish Bob would trade. If he does, I'll try and find the person and tell them to beware of the
man who can slip maybe in and out of you like a wind that goes unnoticed, then creeps up on you and shoves a fist into the woman's space you seem to have fallen so in love with, Laura Palmer. You shouldn't wish for things. You won't get what you want. I'll make sure of it. Remember, Laura Palmer, I can manipulate your conscience so that you feel nothing but what I choose for you to feel. Don't you feel like dying, Laura Palmer? Don't you just feel like giving in to me again? Take me back and I won't cause a horrible accident later today. If someone gets hurt, you can smile knowing it's all due to you. Selfish drug addict lesbian.
Fuck you! Maybe if I just get to Leo's for some coke, I can get my shit together and earn my freedom back. My privacy of thought. All of it. I'm taking it back. It belongs to me. I just need some coke. I need a ride out of here. Fuck it. I'll walk. I'll just get up. Walk downstairs and out the front door like nothing is wrong. I'll get some coke and everything will be better. I will be able to think. I'll just walk to Leo's and everything will be fine. I'll bring you with me, Diary. Laura. April 2nd, 1987. Dear Diary, Leo had company of the female persuasion and they were unable to get to the door. God. Money. Shit. Maybe he'll front the coke to me and I can pay him later or... Wait. He's coming out of the house. Talk soon. L. Leo will be fair about the coke money. I hope. I hope. I hope. April 2nd, 1987. Back and happy at Leo's. He's got it, and it's good. He just set me up with a nose load, and my head is starting to sort through the mental files again. Feel the blood in my veins. I told Leo I wasn't like this weird addict, but I just haven't slept in so long. Wait. Bob is gone. I can't feel him around. Maybe it's because I'm high.
Maybe I'm crazy, and I made him up.
No, fuck that.
I'm crazy if I believe he's only in my imagination. He's real. I know he's real. I do. I couldn't and wouldn't create something as evil as the man I speak of. I am beginning to truly become what Bob told me I would. A fallen girl. Misused. Mistrusted. Lost. Love, sex, and drugs because they are always there. Making me feel the high I expect. No surprises. Can't you see you're killing me, Bob? Is that the point? I miss the days only a year or so ago when I could hardly remember a thing. I just knew somehow that on certain nights I came home, cried a lot, and hid behind the bathroom door, ashamed. I remember what you said to me, you shit. I remember. I know you cut me when I was very young, several times. And you told me that I was in big trouble because I had bled. You told me good children don't bleed down their legs. You told me I was not a child of God. Was there anything you chose to allow me to feel normal about? I grew up with you always there, showing me evidence of my evil blood and nature. You were that voice. You son of a bitch. Leo needs to see me about money. I hope this transaction goes smoothly, painlessly, and silently. I told Leo that if Bobby shows up, I need to hear from him right away. We've got to find another dealer just for tonight. I got the last of the pure, except for Leo's personal stash, and that's just what the name says. Personal. If I didn't have so much shit on my mind, I wouldn't need more than this for the night. But I do. I have to have it. It's all I have right now, man. My friend, the White Line, who I am so conveniently reminded of each time I travel a major highway or see a snowstorm or a dash of baby powder sitting like a tease inside my own fucking house. I hope we can get more. We have to. After the past few days without sleep, this fucking Bob deal, I just can't go to sleep. It's too dangerous. Too dangerous.
And what, Laura Palmer? It's been 2-3 days since you first snorted. You are a messed up bitch. Still here.
Fuck you, Bob! So I am what you always told me I was, a little bitch, dirty and sleazy and fucking people to pay for drugs. You win. You fed me pain when I had none, and when I did have pain, you said it was my own fault. I think you are the most repulsive, evil, conniving man ever to step foot in my life where you had no invitation, no right. What in the fuck do you want? You cheat by never ever having to argue with someone strong enough to fight you. Conquer someone like that.
Then I'll admit you won. I'll even follow you. No arguments. Laura Palmer believes you are a cheat. L.
June 24th, 1987. Dear Diary, it is very late at night and I do not care to check in or to alert someone of where I am or even if I am safe. I don't care to think about it. I don't want to know any more about myself. From anyone. Too many lies have entered me. Like bullets that made wounds. Slow bleeding. It would be years later that I would notice, begin to feel the weakness, fall into the world of drugs, the world of sex for show and power, for strength I thought I wanted. I went to the wrong people. The part of me with the ability to decide for myself whether something is right or wrong has been taken away. A decision lasts only a moment for me before I doubt it and curse myself for ever thinking I was capable of choosing right over wrong. I should have learned ages ago how to remember you. Perhaps I could have saved myself some very sad moments, very bad dreams, and several hundred desperate attempts at regaining my better self, the one who welcomed you in, the one to whom you owe an entire lifetime. I certainly hope you got what you needed. I can't have good things. Not now. I don't know the road to responsibility the way I used to. So simple to just walk down. I have sent Troy away. Set him free with several lashes to the ass. A method that kept me running for some time, as you remember, Bob. He's gone. I don't deserve him. Nor does he deserve a life that begins and ends each day in a small, square box. A reminder, if you will, that he is not free, but owned. I let the pony go. One of the last things I had hoped for before recalling all of your... Shit. Doesn't matter anyway. I hope Troy understood why I made him leave me. I am so afraid that anything I touch runs the risk of contact with Bob. I'll be investigating death. Don't worry. I can feel you deciding how and when. You bastard. Laura. November 12th, 1987. Dear Diary, I hope God reads this. I could use the help. It is definitely the end of my life. The end of my belief in myself. Trust. Everything gone. Leo and Bobby came to get me at the stables because I could hardly walk another step. Bobby said he had called home for me and told them he was taking me out for a surprise dinner. We'd be back late. That was very sweet and very considerate of him, I must admit. But like I told Leo and Bobby from the back seat as I changed clothes, again a thank you to Bobby for borrowing something for me to wear of Donna's, who tells Bobby she is worried about me. I'll admit surprises here. Not that I doubt Donna's loyalty or her friendship, but I believe now too much in Bob. I told them both that I was worried, that I had good reason not to leave any one place all night long. I said I was concerned enough that if we all agreed, we could turn back and forget the coke until tomorrow. Bobby laughed at me, and Leo patted my hand as if I were something cute, something that chirped the same message again and again, pulling a string at my back, unnecessary.
I don't think this is very safe.
We drove out past Milltown and deeper into Lowtown. I've never seen a night so dark. No moon anywhere in the sky. This even worried Leo, who I am sure will take good care of me until I go. Everything I need right now is either a substance or the cash with which to buy a substance. My little white friend. Another lie, but at least I looked this one right in the face and said I believed it anyway. Temporary happiness is better than slowly allowing friends, family, lovers. A frightening peek at how close I am to self-destructing. Don't come too close. There is no longer safety in numbers. I can promise you that. We drove up to a small road without a posted sign of any kind, but assumed it was the right road, as it was the only one around for miles. Bobby just sat there before driving down toward the house. Leo egged him on like, "Come on, Bobby, let's drive." I tried to get his attention, too, but he was honestly in another world. His face was something out of the Twilight Zone. The minute Bobby came out of his thought, he began barreling down the road, complete darkness ahead of us that somewhere shadowed a house. One I hoped was filled to an obscene level with cocaine and a quick drink if I managed to smile. Show teeth, I thought. Leo looked at me like for a moment it struck him as wrong to be down here, under these conditions, not knowing anyone, and padded up with cash totaling in the thousands. I just slid back into my seat and shut up, suddenly realizing how ridiculous it was of me to change clothes. I'm only dressed for trouble when it comes to Lowtown in an hour of darkness still not explained in news reports or radio stations. They're not even saying there is a power failure. I said, I wonder how long would it take the police to get down here after a call? Bobby reached into his jacket and produced his father's pistol. It gleamed only slightly. And I told him he was completely fucked out of his mind to be carrying that around with him. I was now sure that it was not a stomachache I was experiencing, but instead a quite obvious gut instinct to turn around and drive like fuck all until we were close to home. The car did not turn, nor did it slow. The road showed no signs of life, no house up ahead, not a fucking soul around. Well, perhaps a soul or two. Which was even more reason to make a silent getaway while we still had the chance to leave together. Out of nowhere, it seemed, Bobby slammed on the brakes. The truck spun in two full circles, and dust shot up and began to glow in the light from the headlights. Finally, we stopped. We were all in a bit of shock. I thought I saw someone, Bobby said. I didn't want to run him over. We all got out and moved slowly in the dark. All of a sudden, someone grabbed me from behind and began to strangle me. I thought, I don't believe I'm going to die this way. In Lowtown, during a blackout, no one will even admit is actually going on while I'm trying to buy drugs, cocaine, to be specific. And neither of the two strong and burly men I have as companions know I'm being fucking strangled. I thought that was it. I'd bought the goddamn farm here. Cash paid in full. The grip loosened. My vision blurred. And I passed out cold. I woke up in this drug dealer's house with a headache that thought it was an aneurysm. Bobby and Leo came into the room, and Bobby obediently took a seat next to me and acted worried about my head, and his concern reminded me of just how it had happened. And I said, a fair amount of sarcasm in this, I might add, whose fucking bright idea was it to strangle me until I passed out cold? No one responded. Then I guess this would be the way you guys meet chicks here in Lowtown. Silence in return. Classy. The fattest of the four dudes pulled a gun from his shirt and aimed it at me. I looked at him, like he was going a bit overboard, maybe. That a shut up or fuck off would have been perfectly clear to me. He cocked the motherfucking thing and brought it to my face. I apologize, sweetheart. Can't expect everyone wearing a dress to be a girl. He looked at me, licked his gun. Nice titties. I know. Not that his explanation for strangling me made any sense at all. His apology was accepted, and quite seriously preferred, over a permanent hole in my head. I offered my hand and thanked him for not shooting me. Would have really fucked up my evening. There was a pause. And no handshake. Slowly, and with great pleasure, he began to curl the edges of his mouth up, up, up. and ended the performance in a frozen, eat shit and die grin, the likes of which I had only seen once before. I knew the deal was bogus. I found myself kept alert and up to date on the etiquette of silence by the four pistols that found quite important parts of my face on which to rest their barrels. Cold metal. A chill at the base of my neck. Frightening. Call me crazy, but weapons often cause me to hyperventilate and desire large quantities of fresh air. ASAP. I told them I was going to the truck. I kept thinking one of the guns would go off and make a beeline for me. I had to get air, which was made more difficult than usual due to the shrinkage that took place in my neck. Besides, I am afraid of bullets and would bet good money that they hurt when inserted inside the flesh at a high speed. I was suddenly aware of persons in military attire, posted like frozen nightmares all around the house. One of the soldiers came up to my window and I was all huddled up because it was chilly and I was frightened. With one of the straightest faces I had ever seen, he asked, "You ever think about dying?" "Not in a situation like this one." "No, sir." He looked at me like I had just made his promotion arrive a few days earlier than scheduled, and he said, "You must want to step outside the vehicle. Please, miss. Are you just going to shoot me or something?" "There's been a fair amount of cocaine stolen from inside the house. I thought maybe you'd like to show me that the truck is clean and we can go on with business. Par the norm." I got out, and I thought I was going to shatter into little pieces of bone. I was so scared. "Everything okay?" "On my end of the shotgun, yes, it is." I couldn't move. "Your end isn't much of a party, is it?"
"No. No. It's more like a wake. No party I'd like to go to, sir."
"You can go on back to your seat and relax."
"What's going on in the house right now?"
He shrugged. "I guess the boys are sitting around debating whether or not to blow their faces off or send them back to Hightown just the way they came in."
"Oh, I feel much more relaxed now. Thank you."
I had to sit in that fucking truck for almost 40 minutes waiting to find out if Bobby and Leo were allowed to drive home in solid rather than liquid form. At last, they came out of the front door patting these bullies on the backs and laughing like they went way back. I thought, gee, this is great. I'm out here about to be shot point blank for lifting a kilo of cocaine. I carefully inserted it under my dress, which still appeared skin tight and proved me innocent of the theft. And the thanks I get is a snail's pace on the way to the truck and a cheesy example of male bonding if I ever saw one. And then a look of total fear came from Bobby's eyes to mine and registered. "Look out." Guns started going off like the NRA had accepted applicants who were legally blind. People were just fucking shooting at each other, paranoid and so high that if they were hit, they'd notice sometime tomorrow. I slid over into the driver's seat and swung around to where Leo was hiding, unarmed, praying like a madman, and we were gone, speeding down the road back toward the city. Then it was my turn to send those shit look. When we were halfway down the road, I looked in the rearview mirror and saw someone else in the truck bed with Leo, and Leo was losing something awful. Bobby pulled out his gun and with his free hand lifted himself out of the side window and told the guy he had 2 seconds to disappear or die. He had to choose fast. The guy sat up, and Bobby shot him in the chest at a range of about 3, maybe 4 feet. The speed of the bullet sent the guy flying out of the back of the truck and onto the ground behind us. Bobby screamed at me, "Get the hell out of here! Drive!" As soon as we were back on paved roads, Bobby lowered himself into the cab, still holding the gun in his hands as if he were ready to fire. Bobby was silent the whole way home. Leo sat him back and thanked God for the miracle of prayer. I wondered if there was a lot of blood in the back of the truck.
and if the man was dead. At Leo's house, I walked in and asked him if we were alone. He said we were, and so I removed the entire kilo of cocaine from my skirt, plastic in mint condition. A good job, I thought, for an amateur like myself. I apologized to Bobby for probably causing the extra man to hide in back. I was searched, though, and the guy said I was clean. I thought they'd given up, seeing as how everyone was hugging each other on the way out of the house.
They were telling us nice and slow, Leo said, how they'd find us and remove our genitalia a half inch at a time with a butter knife if the bimbo with us was sitting on a kilo of their coke. It wouldn't be long before we'd bypass all hospitals and go directly to hell. I sat down and thought for a moment about the word bimbo.
Hey, you guys, I said. I'm real sorry. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't think you guys would be jumping up and down about it.
No response. I'm the one who suggested we not go at all, remember? A smile from both of them. Leo nodded toward the kilo and said, you got yourself quite a party in that bag.
Bobby turned and looked at me with sudden pride. Couple regular Bonnie and Clydes.
That drama ended, and yet there was another to come. We, of course, decided to begin blowing the stuff up our noses in quantities never before accepted by the human body. If the bullets didn't kill us, the mountain of cocaine would come in a close second. We were high. I needed to get out. I wanted some stuff from the cash and carry. Neither of them would even think of leaving the couch. They were into the television, and even more so the macho thrill of sitting in front of a mountain of cocaine with three straws protruding from a hole at the top of the bag. Both of them looked at me with puppy dog eyes and dilated pupils and said, do you mind if we just hang? I was a little pissed at Bobby for not offering to escort his own girlfriend, the very one who had risked her life, however worthless at the moment, to ensure that he be as high as he was. I figured screw him, and decided I could handle a two-block drive down the road to the store without breaking into the sweats or experiencing an emotional breakdown. I drove off, and as I passed the only two other homes on the road, I noticed a magazine lying on the floor of the truck that I hadn't noticed earlier. Flesh World magazine.
My mind went reeling.
A magazine that could perhaps teach me something I hadn't thought of myself. And bam! I pulled over to the side of the road, and before I got out of the truck to see what I had hit, I saw myself. 4 years ago. A young girl. Awakened by the noise, came flying from the front door and began to slow as she saw the animal in the road. She looked at it and took one step closer, still not going within 15 feet of it, as if to spare herself the reality. I turned and saw Jupiter, a cat identical to the one I considered a best friend before some drughead like myself came along and without any thought, cared more for the stories in a porn magazine than for what might be crossing the road. I couldn't help but begin to cry. Then I couldn't stop. I was the person, years later, I had hated for taking my cat away from me when I needed his company the most. I told the little girl I would do whatever she thought was best. If she wanted a new cat, I would be happy to buy it. She looked at me and tried to cheer me up. Her cat is stuck to the road because of my sex hang-ups, and she's trying to make me feel better. She came around to the side of the truck where I was leaning. I was unable to face her. I felt such tremendous shame. I could barely move.
Please, stop crying.
Jesus. She even sounded like me.
Why are you so sad? I didn't mean to make you feel so bad.
I looked down at her and saw something I missed so much. Such a willingness to forgive. Such a big heart. This one girl could love all of these United States and leave no one feeling lonely. When I was just about your age, I had a cat who looked just like yours. I called him Jupiter, and he was probably the best friend around. Someone hit him out in the street, and I heard the noise and came running to help him. I remember I was so amazed by how quickly death decides it is hungry. There was a moment where there was only wind. We said nothing. Then she looked up at me and asked, "Did you forgive the person who hit your cat?" I crouched down beside her and told her that Jupiter was killed by someone who hit and ran. I figured she was in heaven, but I missed her a lot. And I forgave her death, but I don't think I ever forgot that someone hit my cat, but didn't stop to say they were sorry. She held up her hand, and her nightgown flannel made me smile. "My name is Danielle." She shook my hand tight. "My name is Laura Palmer." I gave her a hug, and she wrapped her arms around me, warm. "It's very nice to meet you, Danielle." I stood. It takes an awfully special person to forgive so easily. She held my hand for a minute, and after thinking about something very carefully, she looked up at me and said, "When I heard the noise, I was worried that the cat had been hurt. But I came out, and I saw you. And you were crying more than me, because you remembered your cat, and it made you sorry you hurt